Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hi, welcome to Fork Tales. Today we're joined by a very special guest, our new Chief Creative Officer of the Pavone Group, Chuck Meehan. Chuck is a veteran creative leader with a track record of building bold, cultural-shaping campaigns for some of the world's biggest brands. He's also a Super Bowl advertising veteran, making back-to-back appearances in the big game in 2021 and 2022, something the Philadelphia Eagles won't be doing this year, by the way. Chuck, welcome to Fork Tales. Great to have you here.
Hi, Michael. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about big ideas. As an ad guy and as creatives, we talk about big ideas all the time. And, you know, it's kind of what we do at the Pavone Group. It's what any good agency does. Well, in your mind, what defines a big idea? And how do you know when you've actually found one?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, it's cool because over the years, as a creative director, ECD, GCD, CCO, I'm constantly critiquing work. I'm constantly critiquing ideas. And most of them don't get past me, you know, which is kind of the drill. And I think the ones that do interpreted the brief in a way I didn't expect. You know, I always tell creatives, show me a different way of looking at something. Mm-hmm. And even when I've judged shows, it's always the stuff that I'm like, how did they get there? Mm-hmm. 99% of things I can see, like, oh, good. It's the stuff that I'm like, they just went A to Q. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's the ideas that connected dots in some completely fresh way, or it's something just that came in completely unexpected. Because again, I've been doing this 30 some years. I've seen everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's those ideas that come in that are just like, wow, that's something I haven't seen. Mm-hmm. And then when you can look at that idea and go, okay, now I can see where a campaign can jump off of that,
right,
in ways that are going to be really meaningful to the brand.
Mm-hmm. The ideas almost write themselves. Once you have that big aha, it kind of like, it just becomes like natural almost.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is the hardest thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I always tell creatives, I'm like, don't bring in a script or a banner or something. I go, just write the paragraph. What is it? You know, it's the elevator pitch. If you can tell me it in one sentence, you have an idea.
Yeah.
So if you can't explain it, you don't know it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. If it's too hard to explain, then obviously it's not completely thought out.
Right.
So obviously you've done a lot in the Super Bowl, and which is exciting. Different format, different way of going about things for sure. Just some background, and you may and probably may or may not know this. So in 2003, I started the first agency in 1992. 2003, we wanted to be a part of the Super Bowl, but we didn't have clients that would allow us to advertise nationally on the Super Bowl. Very few people do have that. And so we never had the chance. So we said internally, like, we came up with an idea. We're like, how could we as an agency be a part of what we feel is the biggest day of the year for advertising, which is the Super Bowl commercials, right? And so what we came up with was this idea of Spot Bowl. And Spot Bowl was the first real-time voting mechanism where consumers watching the game could vote for their favorite TV commercial. We have been doing it since 2003. We're, I think, in our 23rd year And it really took off. It was really exciting. This is actually, candidly, this was before YouTube. I mean, we were literally downloading and digitizing spots all night long. It would take like, I think, half hour to an hour, maybe longer, for the spot to actually appear on the site, because you had to digitize it. And anyway, all this nonsense. But we wanted to be a part of the Super Bowl so badly. And so talk a little bit about what goes into the making of a Super Bowl ad. And we can talk about Dr. Evil and some of those other things as you're going through that. But talk about that opportunity and what it's like to, because again, you wrote some really remarkable spots for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just me, but yeah. You know, Super Bowls, it's the coolest thing and it's the most terrifying thing. You know, and what's hard about it is, you know, a lot of them start in August. Mm-hmm. So if you make it to February, that's 6 months of your life. Mm-hmm. So it's an amazing thing. But like, you know, if you're running an agency, you've got a ton of stuff to do. Mm-hmm. You're working on that thing every week, almost. It's amazing. And if you can survive that gauntlet and somehow get to the game with a great spot, it's a Herculean feat. Mm-hmm. For sure. So like I said, it's an amazing thing, and it's a bit of a horrible thing at the same time.
Well, so speaking of that, you know, and speaking of big ideas, and I absolutely think this is remarkable. You once convinced General Motors to put Dr. Evil's face on their headquarters in place of their logo
right.
for 4 days. So right. And that was off of a Super Bowl spot as well. Can you talk about that a little bit?
The interesting thing about that is, the coolest thing we did on that wasn't actually the spot. It was that, because that basically became a brand activation. Mm-hmm. And it came about because on the spot, the spot is basically, he takes over GM. Mm-hmm. Because climate change had usurped him as the number one threat to the world. So he had to take over GM to get their EV technology to help the world, so then he could take it over. So it was a really conceptual way to use a character, mm-hmm. A, but B, the spot started with his face taken in place of the logo on the Rensen. So we thought, well, why don't we just do that for real? So the execution of the spot led the brand activation idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a lot of people were like, they're never going to go for that. Mm-hmm. You're going to put Dr. Evil on the Rensen, their headquarters, in place of their logo. And we did.
Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know, it's a huge building in Detroit. I mean,
it's an iconic building.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, they're putting Dr. Evil's face an activation and an advertising idea.
Yeah, so that's all pretty. The city's looking at Dr. Evil's yeah. face.
It's awesome.
And then you know, people were filming it with their iPhones.
Oh yeah,
couldn't believe it. And so that brand activation actually became a bigger story than even the spot.
Yeah,
in a sense. And then with all the social videos we did with him and his, you know, entourage, we won a Webby for that whole mm-hmm. that whole campaign. So, yeah, that was a thing where like we just didn't stop at the spot. It led to, you know, that's where you just got to keep your eyes peeled for opportunities. Mm-hmm. How can you take that and leverage it even more? Now, if I'd have had another day shooting, hell, even 4 more hours. We had scripts where he was literally the acting CEO and he had to do like CEO things. Mm-hmm. One idea, he was in a cube and he didn't know what it was. He thought it was a torture device, you know, and we had HR giving him like ethics and guidelines and he just put him in the paper shredder. You know? We had a whole, I was like, oh, if I'd have just had 4 more hours.
That's awesome.
But he literally, he actually took over all the social channels for 4 days. Mm-hmm. And then the CEO, Mary Barra, Monday morning tweeted out, like, I got it from here. So the fact that they were brave enough to do that.
Yeah.
Because I don't even remember an instance where a fake CEO took over, and a fake organization took over a real organization mm-hmm. and became that CEO. I don't remember that.
That's and you know it's the other thing that maybe many people can't appreciate is literally how hard that is to sell through. We're sitting on our couch, we're watching this TV spot. It's funny, we get it. Oh, that's great. but people have no clue what has to happen for that to happen. And that's a, it's a massive undertaking of
time. The hardest part wasn't GM, it was Mike Myers.
Yeah, yeah, right.
We had a dozen meetings with him before he finally, I mean, it was up until a week before, I don't think he had actually signed the deal. It was like, wait, what? And because it was his character, he was extremely precious about what came out of his mouth. So that was a ton of back and forth.
Yeah. So you worked on some campaigns that became part of pop culture. What are the ingredients that elevate a campaign to that level? Like, what does it take to really, you know, become part of the culture?
Well, I think it's leveraging the culture to begin with in some way. The quickest path to that is get a celebrity, I guess, but it certainly doesn't have to be. But I think it's leveraging what's going on in the culture in some way that attaches to your brand in a meaningful way, right? If you can do that, then it can sort of either leverage pop culture or even create it, you know, because advertising has created culture throughout the decades. But yeah, it's finding, it's leveraging culture in a way that goes through your brand in a meaningful way that actually engages people.
So, we talked about some of these, the culture changing commercials, and we talked a little bit about the Mike Myers. You've done 4 Super Bowl commercials. So what's it like behind the scenes of a project of that level, you know, with that pressure and that visibility behind it?
It's a marathon, not a sprint. I mean, the Will Ferrell was actually a sprint, oddly enough, but, you know, because it's so visible, you have probably 4 times the people in the organization involved.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it really hard because everyone's obviously, you know, everyone has opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, you get that idea of people liking, then you got to protect the hell out of it, you know, and just get through that gauntlet. Because like I said, you're presenting your first concept in August.
Mm-hmm.
You got till probably December before you even shoot the thing, right? That's a lot of time.
Yeah. I mean, if you had a guess, like take the Will Ferrell spot, and you did several spots around that. You created lots of content around him and those EV spots. Like, what's it take to get there? Like, how many, like, I know you don't know how many concepts you came up with, but I mean, imagine you probably came in with the several, what you thought were great platforms, great ideas. Then what happens? They got, you know, we like that, we don't like that. And everyone starts, to your point, I can only imagine how many people put their opinions in, both client side, agency side, and anywhere in between. I mean, how did that go? Like, was there a lot there, or was it?
I think if you come in with the right idea that they just can't deny, then you're ahead of the game.
Yeah.
And I think with that, well, I think we presented 4 or 5 concepts to them and they gravitated toward Ferrell immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And they just got it.
Yeah. So obviously that Will was not in all the concepts.
No, he wasn't. Okay. I think we actually had him in one other. We used his character in one, but that one, I mean, the president of the company was a huge Will Ferrell fan.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when I presented, I was like, we don't know if we can get him.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, there's other comedic actors we could use.
Mm-hmm.
The president of GM was like, no, it's gotta be Ferrell. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, well, I don't know if I can get him. And I don't even know at the time how insane it was to get him, because when we did finally get him, I was with his director for like 2 weeks, and his director's like, oh, he says no to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like he goes, I couldn't believe it, but he loved the script.
That's great. That's
so
great.
Everything had to line up for that to happen. We just had to, I think we did some casting tweaks off the very original script, but the integrity of that script didn't change much at all.
Mm-hmm. So back to when we created Spot Bowl, and it was really cool because while we didn't have a spot in the Super Bowl, we became sort of the official, unofficial experts on polling what works, what doesn't work, and all of that, which was really kind of cool. And we were a real time research poll, right? Like, this is what won the day. Yeah, it was really, it's really, really cool. So, you know, one trend over the past 10 years or so is brands releasing their spots before the game. And I got to explain, like, in the, back in the beginning, no one knew who the advertiser was, let alone, you know, what the spot was going to be, let alone released early. And then there was this huge element of surprise. You would guess, we'd hear things like, well, Anheuser-Busch has five spots in the Super Bowl, but you didn't know for who they were for. Then it came to the point where, and it, this is kind of smart because they released it early. A lot of these guys would release it early because, well, let's get some play. People are talking about it online. Oh, did you see the Budweiser spot or the GM spot or the whatever spot? And it, they just kind of get them out there in the internet, and people are looking at it and talking about it. But then the element of surprise wasn't there. It'd be like, oh, okay, there's that spot we were waiting for. It just aired, and we've seen it 10 times already. Like, what's your thought on that? Releasing one before the game or the element of surprise?
That's a good, great question. I think that's been a – there's some brands that still don't release them, not many.
Nope, right. You're right.
And the reason – and what I discovered is – when you're spending that much money, especially if you have celebs, because you got their fees, the production's usually big.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're now kind of win the game before the game.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think the reason that happened is because once that plays on the game, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
By Monday, the whole world's moved on.
Right.
No one's talking about the Super Bowl. Oh, there's a Monday morning, you know, ad age. We'll come with the polls.
Yeah.
Well, let's
say as did we. And we called it the water cooler vote. People were talking in the morning. Hey, did you see that
after
spot?
After Monday, it's
Tuesday, no one knows. Right.
So I think brands looked at that and went, well, wait, if I'm spending $15 million, why don't I release a week ahead of time and get all that buzz and likes and clicks and, you know, get more out of it?
Mm-hmm.
Then release it on Sunday, we hit the poll Monday, then it's gone.
Yeah.
You know, unless the spot's like part of a campaign.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which does happen.
That's been happening more and more recently. Yeah.
Which
totally
is,
agree.
Which is also, I think, another way to look at I think what the Super Bowl turned into is like, you know, I think the brands are looking at it like, don't make it a one-off.
Right. Well, and to your point, I mean, it's a great place to launch like a big platform idea that all those other ideas are going to sort of peel off of for the rest of the year, right? So I think
I've always said this, every brand should approach any launch, any project like the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
You're trying to do the most absolute engaging work that is impossible to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
And people actually want to watch, you know, I, to me, the same tenets apply.
Sure.
Whether your audience is 100 million or one, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, so how do you measure success for something like a Super Bowl spot?
Just the buzz it creates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, we always talk about like, we got to get our brands talked about, you know. Got to get them in the conversation. So the more buzz it creates, you know, the Pharaoh's a good example. It's like, you know, the Norwegian prime minister clapped back to one of his, you know, things. So we literally created an international conversation about EVs,
mm-hmm.
which then puts GM at the beginning of that conversation. I remember like a month after that, I was on a plane reading The Economist and there was an article about EVs and it mentioned the spot.
Mm-hmm.
It talked about, you know, Biden's regulations basically made the spot house. And it was the beginning of this whole article on how EVs were. So that's when you know you've done something, when it lands in an Economist article.
Mm-hmm. The Super Bowl, I found too, and because we get asked this question all the time, you know, it's like the price of the spot keeps going up 30 seconds, you know, how many millions of dollars for 30 seconds? Is it worth it? And it's interesting because the one unfair thing I'll say about the Super Bowl is, which is awesome as far as we're concerned, it's the day everyone's paying attention to it. More than half the people watch the Super Bowl to see the commercials,
right?
Over the game. Because right. Look, let's face it, unless your team's in it, I mean, you're there for the nachos and the camaraderie and the commercials, right? Otherwise, you know, and it's the entertainment. So for the one day a year, we get to entertain, make people laugh. And obviously you got to work in the brand attributes and make people remember the spot. You know, that's super important. You know, and to your point, it all comes from the buzz, right? You got to really, you know, hit a home run or get score a touchdown that day with the spot. So I have to ask, what is your, and you can't pick one of yours, because you did what, Hellman's? You did a commercial for Hellman's in Super Bowl?
I wrote a script for Hellman's as a freelancer. Mm-hmm. The spot was based on my script. First one I did was Universal Orlando Resort back in 2003.
Okay.
Which was interesting because I wrote this script as a freelancer for a pitch.
Huh.
We won the pitch, they hired me, and then we produced actually that script as a
wow, that's rare
spot. So that was pretty cool. It was a good spot. It was, you know, it was hard to get super out there and edgy with them. It was a nice idea, but it was my first one. It was fun.
Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite Super Bowl spot of all time? I mean, you can't pick one of yours.
Oh, I'm not going to say one of mine. you know, the one I always go back to is the kid Darth Vader.
Yeah. Volkswagen.
That's just the perfect spot on every level.
Mm-hmm. You know, in mine, and it's funny only because, well, I remember it. It just hit me between the eyes. There was actually a Budweiser spot, and it was when the guy raises this horse to be a Clydesdale, and the horse goes off. And I believe it was at least a 60-second spot. It was like a, you know, yeah. It was a movie. I got so emotional because they do a parade and stuff, and the guy's standing there, and the horse recognizes him, and he breaks away. I'm getting emotional thinking about it. I had to do a live TV interview with Spot Bowl and talking about commercials, and that spot came on, and they wanted to see what spots, and I could not show it. I was sitting there on live TV with like a tear coming down my face. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you got to love a commercial that actually can pull out emotion and make, you know, move you, you know? I don't know what like a horse recognizes his owner has to do with drinking a Pilsner, but you know, it worked. I mean, it's a Clydesdale. It's Budweiser.
They used something inherent to the brand.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, that was great. But I was just like, oh my God, I'm sitting there like kind of like teary eyed because of this horse found is, you know, but I think I'm always blown away. And McDonald's was good at this back in the day too, not just on the Super Bowl. When anyone can show a spot of when they can do in 30 seconds, if they can evoke that much emotion that could actually, you know, I mean, certainly laughing's great. We all love funny commercials, but man, if they can almost make you cry or get that emotional or something, that's pretty, pretty powerful stuff. Because as you well know, it's really hard to do that in 30 seconds or 60 seconds.
It's amazing. That's the discipline.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's interesting. When I've worked with people outside advertising, like, they don't quite get it.
No.
It's a very specific art.
Sure. I mean, look, you can cry at the end of a movie, but hell, we had an hour and a half to build that up to make you cry. I mean, to do it in 30 seconds is absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, so. you've got to put a three-act story
in
60 seconds. It's really,
yeah,
that's the discipline, you know, for sure.
So we just said about some of this, though. Some of the funniest or most emotional spots aren't ones that actually move product. How do you balance entertainment with effectiveness?
Well, I think the entertainment's got to come out of the product or brand in a unique way, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, still the best advertisings are product demonstrations. So if you can demonstrate that product to where we're like, oh, that helps me or whatever, mm-hmm. but in a super entertaining way, you know, that's what does. It's not about just being out there to be out there. Or funny to be funny, it still has to come through what's unique about that product or what it does. You know, that's where it has to come from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because yeah, you want to remember, but you want to remember why. Like, okay, if you build that episodic memory, you know, we're trying to get there with a lot of our clients, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this will probably be the last thing on the Super Bowl because we could probably go in this forever. But sure. You worked with some major celebrities, right? So some in the Super Bowl, some weren't. Will Ferrell, Mike Myers, Jim Gaffigan, Charlie Sheen. What creative challenges come with working with these guys? I mean, because so many of them, especially the comedians, they all seem like they'd be great to work with, fun, yeah. You know, there's funny, but I'm sure there's a lot to it. Talk a little bit about that.
It's interesting because a lot of people ask me that question because I have worked with a ton of celebs. And everyone's question is like, okay, who was the asshole? You know? And I'm like, I go, none of them really. I didn't, you know, I had pretty great experiences with most all of them. I will say, like, we did Ferrell and then Mike Myers back to back. And I sold Myers. I said, this one's going to be 10 times harder. Mm-hmm. Because Will was just playing himself.
Right.
Mike was his character.
Right.
So he's going to be a lot more prescriptive about what that character says. So that's what made that a lot more challenging.
Yeah. And you can respect that because that character's a brand, right? I mean, you can't have him say, hey, I do, you know.
Like I can't tell him what the Kriegel should say.
Yeah. You know?
Even though we did have a lot of back and forth on it, I still think what I think's funny.
Yeah.
You know, that script went. Well, one of the challenges is, you know, some of them, if they have in the commercials, I think even when we were shooting, he thought it was a 3-minute sketch. You know, like some scripts came back and we're like, it's 60. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're not coming from this world, they don't kind of grasp, like, what do you mean I only have 60 seconds? So that's what those challenges are. But everyone else, I mean, I had some really great experiences. Catherine Hahn was amazing. Just couldn't have been nicer. Charlie Sheen was great. Mm-hmm. Showed up on time, gave us 8 hours.
It's awesome.
I was like spitting lines at him and he was just playing them all back.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. It's great. All right, so he is like using them in a way that makes sense for the product.
Yep. Yep.
You know, a lot of celebs are just using very gratuitously and that.
Yeah, sure. That's horrible. And we see way too much of that. So you can't talk. Okay. We can't talk about creativity today. Or pretty much anything, actually, without mentioning AI and AI changing the role of creatives in advertising. How do you see AI changing the role of creative in advertising?
Oh God, that's the question, man. Every day it seems to change. You know, I mean, the easy answer is it's a tool. Mm-hmm. I think it can certainly amplify what we do. I don't think, you know, someone said a while back, it's not going to replace us, but it's not going to save us either. You know, it's still got to be about big ideas. My thing is like, you know, I don't want like younger people in this business, you know, you've got to just use it as a tool. My fear is that, you know, musicians don't outsource their practicing. Mm-hmm. Athletes don't outsource their drills. You know, so the creatives that are still learning and are just going straight to it with a brief, they're not going to last because it takes a lot of this work before you really get how it works. Mm-hmm. Your brain's got to go through thousands and thousands of iterations of ideas and thinking and scripting and writing. And you've got to have that struggle.
Yeah.
So that's what I think the challenge is, you know, human beings, like it's pretty easy to go to the line of least resistance. And if there's this thing that can, you know, get me to my party earlier,
sure.
You know, I think it's dangerous in that way. I mean, geez, it took me 5, 7, 8 years before I really understood how to do this. Mm-hmm. That was after thousands of hours of practicing.
Yep. And a lot of times, I mean, we all, from the creative side, I'll say you all come up with an idea. That first idea or second idea, it's usually pretty good. Pretty good. And it's easy just to sit there and say, hey, yeah, it's good enough. It's good. It's good. It's good. But rarely is it great. And rarely is it the one that is really transcends the brand and all that.
There's a creative process to this that I don't care how much technology there is, there's still, this stuff takes time. Mm-hmm. You know, I did a campaign for the D-Day Museum years ago and one lion and pencil and Andy and everything. And I probably wrote over 100 headlines to get to 6. Mm-hmm. It was weeks, mm-hmm. You know, Now, I mean, I'm scared someone would just run to Chad and go, give me, you know, but that made me a better writer.
Yeah.
So I think it's, yeah, I think for sure it's got to be used judiciously. It's changing every day. But I just, like I said, you can't use it in place of your thinking. You got to use it to amplify your thinking.
Well, you know, it's my opinion too is I think that, look, people are going to use it and they are going to take that first thing and they are going to spit something out. And clients will do it internally too, right? They'll save costs. They just put it in chat, see what it comes out. Oh, well, that's good enough. Let's do it. But I think what it's going to do is I feel it's going to create a lot of mediocrity. And I think to what you said earlier about, you know, finding new ways in and different ways in and unique ways in, that's the stuff that's going to break through the mediocrity. That's the stuff that's going to break through the clutter. And that's where the genius really is. And that's, you know, it's finding an elegant, unique solution or a different way of saying something. Because at the end of the day, you know, we've got to break through the clutter. We've got to get a piece of someone's mind to listen to us before we can sell them anything. So it's got to break through, right? And I just think that so many people are going to be relying on just mediocrity, you know? And so that's good for us. That's
AI
good for
doesn't us. Have a point of view.
Right, right.
You know, I think that's the difference. And I just think, you know, look, I use it a little. I don't use it a ton. Just, you know, I like concepting.
Yeah.
I like solving problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't mean AI can't be part of that.
Yeah, no, of course. All right, so you said before that remote work can be tough on creative, especially creativity, especially for young creatives who need that live mentorship. Talk a little bit more about that.
Well, I could talk about that for days. I've gotten in so many arguments with people. I'm not a fan of it. I get why I think it's needed in some cases. I've run groups remote and I've run them, you know, when they're in the agency and it's night and day for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm much better mentoring and running people when I'm with them than if they're not here.
Yep. Yep.
And you know, there's a lot of, and everyone's like, we got Zoom, you can work at home. Well, sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure. But, you know, say culture beats the shit out of strategy. Well, if nobody's ever together, how do you create culture? You know, and that doesn't mean you have to be here working all the day. I read something like, oh, what about all the distractions and stuff? I'm like, well, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to get that energy in the room from people. I mean, when I came up, I couldn't wait to get the office.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, it was like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory to me. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to lunch with this director and, you know, the whole world was open to me. And,
yep.
And I think what people forget is, I think they asked Pat Fallon years ago, like, how do you motivate people? And he said, the printer. And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, well, you go to the printer and you see the Time Magazine campaign being printed out. You're going to go, shit, I better stay a little later or work a little harder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's something to be around people and getting some healthy competition. You lose all that.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's also, right. You know, they need to see me walking in front of their office and looking at me and going, oh, God, I got to present to him in 2 days or her, whoever it is.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a sense of urgency there that's gone if you're just in your back bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how, you know, again, being maybe old school, as far as being in this industry a long time, I have this line, I've said it several times over my career to the team. It's like, and I mean this sincerely, like I always had a passion for this business. My line has simply been, you know, I was a little kid, you know, I wanted to be a professional baseball player. I wanted to be a pitcher. And I loved playing baseball and I was pretty good at it. But as I got older, you know, I realized I wasn't going to be a professional baseball player. Then I got into music. I played drums and then I wanted to be a rock and roll star. And it was awesome. I'd played in some bands and played out and it was the coolest thing in the world. And it was fantastic. I knew I wasn't going to make a living there. And I ended up in advertising as a creative. And to me, I'm like, it's the same thing, man. You know, it's an exciting thing. It's an art. It's a passion. It's an energy. It's a vibe. It's as good as, you know, being a professional athlete or a rock star to me. And the sad fact about that is if you want to be a professional athlete or a rock star, you're probably gonna have to work weekends and sometimes nights. And, you know, but that came with the territory. And I always just, I always like really associated that in my mindset. That's how I was wired. And I'm not saying that's for everybody. I'm not saying anyone even has to agree with that, but that's how I looked at it. I mean, what a great way to make a living, you know, writing, writing concepts or commercials, make people laugh or cry or feel something. I mean, and just, you know, it's just a wonderful, wonderful, I don't know, thing, I think, from a business creative standpoint.
It's like, I don't get these kids come out of college and the whole world's ahead of them and they want to stay in their back bedroom.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I just,
I'm going to the agency. I was meeting people that I saw their ads in the awards annuals and they're going to lunch with me and we're going to go grab a beer. And like, it was, and look, I also, when I first got in the business, I would sit in on meetings on projects I wasn't even working on just to listen to the
scene. Oh, sure.
We'll talk.
Yeah. Yeah. How did they come up with that?
An hour.
Yeah.
Listen to how they were solving problems. Well, if you're not there, I mean, there's so many little things you don't think about that make a huge difference. And just the other day I had, we had four creatives in a room and there's stuff we did in there I know wouldn't have happened if we weren't together.
Right.
Like major things that we found, you know, and that's how it works. You create, you leave, you get a sandwich, you start talking about movies, then you leave, you come back. And then, you know, it's just, I don't know. I enjoy that.
Yep. Yep.
I think it's a better process for me.
Yeah. It's cool to see.
Young, you've got like, it's hard for me to mentor you if you're not here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also really exciting to see younger folks, executing, great ideas or coming up with great stuff. It's like, it's super cool and rewarding when you see, you know, other folks contributing and getting a high off of it.
Oh, completely. I mean, I, you know, the best managers are the ones that want the people underneath them to succeed.
Yeah, sure.
I want nothing more than that. And I know if they're really working hard, you know, I want to sell their work.
Sure.
Yeah. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, hey, so I think very topical in that, you know, we're sitting here talking about like Super Bowl commercials and like long form storytelling and great creative. And so, you know, the way people consume stories now in advertising or marketing has completely changed. In your opinion, what's the most exciting place for creative storytelling to happen? Is it TV, you know, over the top video? Is it social media, experiential? Like how do you bring it all together for a client? I mean, you know, you want to have a big platform, big story, but there's all these, for lack of a better word, fragmented or different types of media or different ways we digest these medias.
Right.
I mean, what's the best way to bring it all together?
Well, it's the idea. You know, I mean, it's that, what is the idea that's gonna shake culture or put the brand in culture in a way? And, you know, this branded storytelling has gotten a lot of heat lately. And I've always thought that.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought brands should be like entertainment companies.
Mm-hmm.
I've been saying that for years. So it's cool to see this kind of now happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did a campaign for Del Taco about 16 years ago. And we basically hosted a variety show on Facebook. And they were 5-minute webisodes. And I thought, this is what it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now they would have made a sitcom out of it. It was basically, the whole thing took place inside of Del Taco. It had a host and it was like a show. It was like, you know, we just used TV spots to drive people to the Facebook page to watch the episode or webisode.
Right.
They called it. But that's where, like, that was 16 years ago. That's where my head's always been.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's like, now all this brand of storytelling is coming up and now brands are even becoming their own media. You know, I think that's what it is. It's just, you've got to be the entertaining thing, not the thing that's interrupting the entertaining thing.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, another question. You've built and led a lot of creative departments. What's your philosophy on creative leadership and how's it evolved over the years? How's it changed?
I don't think it's changed that much. I think, you know, if you hire well, you'll be a better leader. That's part of it. I was... quote the Lou Holtz line. Lou Holtz said, they say I'm a great motivator. I just get rid of the people who aren't motivated. You know, I mean, this is a unique business. It's a very unique business.
Mm-hmm.
the only ones that survive are passionate, because that's the only thing that gets through, gets you through all the bullshit up and the highs and the lows.
No question.
And I can guide you. I can direct you. I can lead you. I can't put that thing in you. Because those are the people that make it. And I've seen it over and over again.
Sure.
You know, and it's not just talent, but then you put talent to that and then you're really dangerous. But I think it's creating an environment for people to succeed. You know, and coming up, I worked with some great creative directors. I worked with ones that I didn't think were so good, but I learned from both. And I think it's creating a space where people are just unafraid to swing for the fence. You know, come in, swing, you miss, fine. I just want you swinging. Because I can deal with misses. What I can't deal with is like laziness. If you didn't,
right.
And I can tell.
Yeah.
If you didn't put the time into it, then you're wasting my time.
Yeah. You never punish sins of proactivity. It's sins of inactivity or laziness.
Right.
You know?
And yeah. I think that's what it is. I think you can't be afraid to be visible.
It's well said. Well said.
So you gotta get up there and swing and miss, fine. But I don't want to be afraid to miss.
So we're letting them swing and miss. You know, how do you create an environment where teams feel safe to take those risks?
Well, you just have to let them know it's okay. Then I'm not gonna, you know, hammer them because they did bring in something that didn't work.
You know, I think right there, I totally agree with that. I think you summed up what the power of an independent, or necessarily independent, but any agency other than, like, when I say in-house, if you're an in-house shop, what happens all the time is, well, the boss won't go for that. I mean, sometimes you'll get that. You'll get people pushing back. Well, the client might not like it. That's too crazy. That's too out there. But really, in an agency, it usually is a safe place for ideas. It's a safe place for people to nurture their ideas, well, big ideas. Whereas in-house, a lot of times, people won't do it. They just won't. They won't take a, they won't swing for a fence because, in most cases, not all, but most cases, in-house. Because they'll be like, oh, they're not going to go for that. Oh, that, no, you can't do that. Oh, no. There'll be too many people that will say no. There's too many no machines out there that that will affect it.
There's no machines because your brain defaults to what it knows.
Right.
And what it's seen. That's why really big ideas are so hard to get over the fence, because it's harder for people to wrap their heads around it. And it's a bigger leap, you know, but those are the exact things. It's really the things we're getting hired to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
So brands used to think in silos, TV, digital, social, now everything's connected. You know, what does integrated storytelling look like in practice today? Like when you're thinking of a campaign for a new, you know, obviously, you know, you're the chief creative officer. So you're at Pavone Group. So you're over top of Pavone clients, the Quench clients, the Varsity clients, the Vigor clients. So you're on top of all of our different agency clients. So how do you integrate, you know, the story? If it's, you know, the budget has maybe some money in it for social TV, maybe there's some PRs. How do you bring that together, tie that all together?
Well, that's the big question, right? I mean, I think it comes back to the idea, what is that connective tissue that can bounce other places? But then the converse of that is people are consuming media in way different ways. We don't have the collective experience we used to have, right? So everything you do has to live on its own, whether it's part of a bigger campaign or not, because you can't assume they've seen anything else anywhere else, right? There's kind of two things going on there.
Yeah.
There's an integrated campaign with tissue, but then there's also that one single thing I see on the site that I always go to has to resonate with me. We can't assume they know that's part of this this bigger campaign idea that is taking you to this place, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really interesting point. And it's actually been a lot of debate in here. And again, maybe I'm a little old school, but you know, they say the curtains don't need to match the drapes. So you know, the stuff that they see on TikTok doesn't have to be like it is on Instagram, like it is on television, like it is in whatever online video, whatever. But right. To me, I guess my opinion on that is, and I'm not saying everything has to be, it's all just edited different time frames or formats. But to me, though, there has to be enough connective tissue, to use your words, across all those communications and all those different platforms so that you know who it is that we're talking to. I mean, if you go to a party and you would change your hairstyle, your look, and how you act and your accent, and then show up in the same group a month later with a different hairstyle, different way you look, different accent, people are, you know, there's nothing that's going to connect you. No one's going to remember that or you. And so to me, you know, I feel like a lot of times people want to do things way different in each of these platforms. I don't think that's really wise.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think there's something to be said for consistency. Just that maximizes your budget, I think.
Right.
But I think it also comes down to what the brand voice is. Are you consistent with the brand voice?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that everything you see, you know, okay, I know what they stand for.
Yeah.
And I know what the values are, you know.
And I'll say credit to you. I know a lot of what we've been working on for our clients, we've created these really cool platforms that can, I don't say can be modular, but they can break down into these different places and they can be in different types of platforms or different time allotments. And they all harken back to the big idea and carry it through. And mm-hmm. I think that's really what it's all about. That's the sweet spot as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So you worked with, you know, with Quench, CPG, food and beverage, Vigor does all the restaurants, you know, so you've worked with some iconic restaurant brands and CPG food brands, Hellman's, McDonald's, Del Taco. If you're advising a new startup in that space, what's the one thing you tell them to focus on creatively from day one? You know, if I'm starting my own, a new burrito chain, or if I'm a new brand of pickles or whatever, I mean, like what would you tell them to focus on?
First thing I tell them, the product. That's what I tell them to focus on. I'm constantly amazed when I go to some startup food brand and I go in there and it's just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, huh? Because advertising is not going to fix that. It'll just kill it faster. You know, coming off a famous burn back line. Yeah. So you know, because in those kind of senses that you're doing the brand through the product and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And so
once you get beyond the product, what creatively would you tell them to do?
Well, get out there with something big.
Mm-hmm.
Like take that giant swing.
Mm-hmm.
Get people talking about you. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, be bold. Be bold and go out there big.
Good.
Yeah, for sure.
If you could change one thing about how clients and agencies work together, what would it be?
One thing? Well, I think, you know, look, the best work comes from partnerships, right? When we're true partners, and there's trust both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we're listening, collaborating with them because they know more about the brand. And they're letting us be as great as we can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's getting them to buy into a vision together.
Mm-hmm.
That's up here. You know?
Yeah.
Because that's it.
Again, that's well said, because I feel like we've been doing that together very recently. And I'll say, as a part of those too, the one thing I would add to that, like, is to, you know, I'd said we're putting these big platform ideas together. Well, the reason they're big and the reason they're great is because they do feed the vision. And then the client sees that vision that they didn't even know they had for, let's say, and it all sort of comes together at that level. And I think the way I'd answer that question about working together is, and you're really kind of alluding to it though, you know, these guys are phenomenal at what they do. They do know their brands and they know their products and they know the industry. They're steeped in it. And because of that though, you know, they've all consumed media all their lives. So they have an opinion on how to create or how to do marketing and media. And, you know, it's like, you know, we don't really go in there and tell them how to run their factories, change their recipes, make a different whatever. It's sort of like you want almost that same respect on the other side. Let us do our jobs. We're going to help you. We're here to help you. We're not here to hurt you.
That's the unique thing about advertising. Jerry Delafamina said years ago, he goes, it looks easy.
Yeah.
Well, so does playing the piano.
Right. That's right. That's right. You know, it does. Piano. Look at watching someone play the piano. It does look easy. Like you should, you feel like you should be able to start banging his keys and it should sound like some kind of great blues chord.
And I've been doing this a long time and I will solve stuff on the spot. People just be like, but again, it's 30 years and 10 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You know, that's what people don't realize.
Yeah. Great stuff. Well, listen, I've got one last question. And because this is a Forktales food and beverage, you know, Quench food and beverage, CPG, Vigor restaurants. Last question. If you had one final meal, what would you eat and why?
One final meal.
Yeah, we're not executing you here. Just like, you know, what's your meal?
Am I getting fired tomorrow?
No. Just one final meal. Like, you know, I have it waiting for you outside. No, I'm just kidding. But like, if you could pick one, like, you know,
I'll tell you exactly what it was. About 3 weeks ago in Center City, Philadelphia, it was a sushi place.
Really?
I went to.
Wow. I went
with a director friend of mine. It was the greatest sushi I've ever had in my life.
Better than our sushi in Atlanta.
I go there, I swear to God.
Better than our sushi in Atlanta.
Yes, it was.
Really?
Yes, okay. I got to take you to this place.
I'm all in. I'll be down next week. All right.
And, you know, I lived in LA, San Francisco. I've had the best sushi on the planet. Same with the director. He lived in LA. And we were both like, oh, what the hell?
That's awesome.
Like two bars, one downstairs, one tucked back. Two chefs just sent feeding you stuff. You don't order anything.
Nice.
So there you go.
Yeah. Awesome. I can't wait to check it out.
So. Next time you're in, we'll go.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, great. Well, hey, Chuck, you know, it's a pleasure. I always enjoy the time and appreciate you being a part of our team. And thanks for taking the time to be on Forktales.
Oh, pleasure's all mine, Michael.
Good deal.
Thanks.
Thank you.